Welcome everyone to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, for the people, by the people, of the Detroit Lions variety. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know who we are. You know what this is. This is the PODcast. It's called that because Pride of Detroit, POD. Podcast, PODcast. Yeah, that's how we do it. All right. I'm Chris Lemieux, at Adequate Host, and I'm back from Philly. I brought my boys back with me, too. Alex Reno is here at Alex_Reno. He's back again. We got him back on the podcast. Holy crap. And Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD. He is here. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
And Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, is here at Detroit Online. Hello, Jeremy.
I ain't never left. I've been sitting in this Skype room all week waiting for you guys to come back.
Yeah. Yep, Wow. Yep, he didn't come with us. He was here very lonely.
You're like the loyal dog. You're such a good boy.
Mr. Pickles.
Very, very... Oh, God.
I could hear your tail wagging when I got on Skype.
He's got some very pettable hair.
We opened the door when we got back from Philly, and we just heard him bounding down the stairs. He was so happy.
Almost as happy as we are with the Lions draft?
Yeah, about I would say. We're going to get into that in a second. I want to keep working on Philadelphia and where we were, though. But first, happy May Day. We are recording on Monday. It's coming out a little later, but still, happy May Day. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, happy Jimmy John's Customer Appreciation Day, I believe.
You're right, yeah. Well, like half their menu's like a dollar?
Yeah. The first half, not the club sandwiches, but like everything else. I'm going there tomorrow. That's a very odd thing to throw in right after I say happy May Day, though, but I apologize. I don't. Let's talk about Philly. We had fun in Philly. All of us were there, except for Jeremy, because he's a loser. Oh. What can we say about Philadelphia that we have not said already? It was awesome.
Cheesesteaks were great.
Yeah, we had two cheesesteaks. We had ones from Woodrow's, and we had ones from Jimmy G's. Which would you guys say was probably the better of the cheesesteaks you had?
They were pretty much on par with each other. I liked the peppers and the provolone cheese from Jimmy G's. I tried out the Whiz for the first time at Woodrow's, which was also really good. I would have to give the edge of the fries to Jimmy G's, though, for sure.
Just to be clear, this isn't Jimmy Garoppolo's cheesesteak joint in Philly.
It could be. We don't know for sure.
I guess I shouldn't speak unless I have full knowledge. Exactly. I can't really compare the two, so I'm going to have to leave this up to you, Chris, because I had the cheesesteak at Woodrow's, but then I got a chicken Italiano at Jimmy G's.
Hold up. No, I thought Alex got the chicken. No, you did get the chicken Italiano. That's right.
We did drink a lot on Saturday, so I forgive you for not remembering that.
We're going to get to that in a second, but yes. So I thought, man, I was just so in love with what Woodrow's did. They did that, like, the truffle cheese whiz. And by the way, like, I've known this for a while, and I keep forgetting not as many people aren't aware of this, but when we talk about cheese whiz in Philly, we're not talking about, like, you know, the string cheese out of the aerosol can and shit. Cheese whiz is like, it's like a Velveeta cheese sauce kind of thing.
It's like a cheese paste.
Yeah, it's like if you get Velveeta and melt it. It's like that. It's just a processed cheese product, but it's fine. But it was very good. I thought Woodrow's was excellent, and I will recommend that every time.
Fair enough. It was pretty good. It was pretty, pretty good.
Shout out to Brandon for turning us or steering us in that direction then.
Yep, we met up with a lot of the Bleeding Green Nation guys, so shout out to them. Shout out to Ben Natan and his chest hair.
The chest hair, yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful chest hair. Beautiful red boy.
Wow.
Red-haired boy. Beautiful red-haired boy.
Wow.
Whatever.
Anyways.
And we had fun in Draft Town. Ryan and Alex, you guys ran the 40. You had your verticals taken.
Yep.
Kind of underwhelming, though, really, at the end of the day. Like, maybe it's just because lines were long for food and everything
was
like $10.
Wait a second. Are you saying our drills were underwhelming?
He was talking about Draft Town.
I'm talking about Draft Town.
Chill out, Chris.
You're saying Oikos didn't put on a good show?
I wouldn't know because the line for the Oikos free samples was way too long.
I didn't want to try that tasteless garbage anyway.
Yeah.
We did manage to get free Skittles, though. We got free Skittles.
What were your 40 times?
They didn't give us a time. They did not give us a time. Even... So, somebody said that if you win the race, they give you your time, but even that didn't happen.
What's the point of running the 40 if you don't figure out your time?
All you know is if you win or lose against Demaryius Thomas, and who's going to run a 4-5 flat? I mean...
I thought I could.
I know you did.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing about that whole area was Demaryius Thomas kept coming up on video boards, and he would just have his arms crossed and look very disapproving of you. It was very demotivational, yeah. I thought.
That's fine.
They did give us our scores for the vert, though, and after I got a 35-inch vertical, I was convinced I could dunk a basketball that night.
You dunked a lot of things into cylinders, but one of them was not a basketball.
So let's get on to the rest of the night. So, by the way, shout out to those DET guys, Irv and Gandhi and their friend Chris. We met up with all three of them. They were friends of our friend Jerry Mallory as well. But they were all in town. We met up with them for drinks, and we hit up multiple places. Was it Gandhi who got us into that exclusive club that night?
I'm not too sure. I can't remember.
It might have been Irv. Either way, all I know is that we almost didn't get in. I got, like, grabbed by the scruff of my neck trying to slip in until they could get it figured out, but... We got in. We had fun down there. Ryan nearly got into a fight and is now banned from ever going back to a different bar in Philadelphia.
Yeah, was it like a bar in like South Philly? I wouldn't want to go back to that dump anyways.
Dude, it was a really hipster part of town. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was incredibly hipster. Like, nothing was really open, but everything had like these old storefront looking things. Everything was like signs were made out of wood and shit, but then you could tell like 90% of the people there were white as lilies.
Yeah, but you know what they did have there though was karaoke, and we have failed all Lions fans because we did not manage to request or sing Africa by Toto.
We didn't get any karaoke in. Our friends were not having it that night, so we ended up leaving pretty early.
Hold on, let's back up. You guys just brush over Ryan almost getting into a fight, and you're just talking about logistics.
Because it wasn't that big. He did not almost get into a fight.
He got kicked out of a bar.
That's not true. He did not get kicked out. Can I explain what happened?
Yes. So I was about to say, we left a little early, and Ryan, what did you forget when we were leaving early from Adobe?
Okay. Sorry. I had these accusations hurled at me and all these ill names thrown my way, Alex Reno. When we were at Adobe, I waited so long to get a beer because there were only two people that were working behind the bar, and there were so many people. There were more people there than they could accommodate for, but I was waiting to order one beer, and then it turned into, okay, I'm going to order Alex a beer too. And I knew we weren't going to be there long, so I ordered the two beers, and she said, do you want me to start a tab? And I said, no, close it out. So I'm waiting for her, and then I get like wrapped up into a conversation with somebody, and I'm talking to somebody, and then eventually like we move to the back to where the karaoke is, and then we get in a lift and we leave, we go to the next bar. When we're at the next bar, I go to pay for my first drink, and I realize that I don't have my credit card on me, so I'm like, oh crap. Figure out that I left it at the other bar, I call the Adobe Cafe that we were at, and they said, yeah, we have it. So we shut down the bar that we're at, and then we go back to Adobe, and it's like 2:20. In the morning, and they're closed, and they're counting their tills, and they're, you know, organizing all the receipts and stuff, and I knock on the door. Nobody would come to the door. They were just, like, staring at me. Like, I was, like, some wino trying to get in and get, you know, keep the night going. And I was like, hello, my card, it's in there. They're like, what does it look like? And I was like, it's blue, and it has my name on it. And so they bring it out there, and they have me sign. So I sign my bill. I leave them no tip. Because, first of all, you were supposed to give me back my card because I told you to close it out. And you guys were douchebags about it. So, I left them no tip.
So they do you the favor of giving your credit card after hours, and you decide to give them zero tip.
Why should he? He's not paying for anything. So that's the thing. As we're walking away, all of a sudden the guy pops out again and says straight to Ryan's face, no tip.
He's in the right. I'm sorry.
To which I responded, you guys did a horrible job. No.
And he tells you not to come back.
And I was like, I wouldn't want to come back to this dump again anyways.
Yeah, we're not even like hiding the name of the
Dang
bar.
It!
Fuck a d-
Dang it! I should have just screamed, "We own the Eagles."
You would have been lucky because there was not a single soul on that street at the time.
And then ran away in the night.
We're not even hiding the name. We're putting them on blast. It was fucking awful. The karaoke sucked.
This is a Yelp review via Blog Talk Radio.
That's Brandon's favorite spot too.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry, Brandon.
I got one more question about Philly. How was it watching the first round from the hotel room, you fucking losers?
We weren't in the hotel room that much. Like, we weren't.
You call me a fucking loser. You flew all the way to Philadelphia and you watched the first round, the most exciting round, from the comforts of your hotel room.
All right. Listen, hey, can I do this?
All right, go ahead, Ryan.
Let me take care of this. All right, so... The place was so incredibly packed with people, there would have been zero chance that we could have recorded a Facebook Live, which we did for you lovely people who follow us on Facebook at Pride of Detroit. And beyond that, it was way too much fun to just be in the hotel and laugh at the Bears for the entire night. But I have to say, I probably had a much better time the second night when we went down to Draft Town to watch the second round and the majority of the third round, just because, like, it wasn't like as hot outside, and B, there weren't nearly as many people as there was on Thursday.
So like a ton of Eagles fans.
Yeah, I mean, there are still a ton of people, but we got a lot closer on day two than we were on day one. So, and like, I don't know, like, if you've never been to the draft and you don't understand, but like the time between picks is so incredibly boring because it's literally just like, I mean, it's like the equivalent of like elevator music. Like, sure, they play some like highlight packages every once in a while and they like throw up some like, you know, images on the screen. But like other than that, like it's not that interesting.
We didn't even get highlight packages there in the crowd for day two. Like, and that's the thing, like when you're watching at home on TV, they have the highlight packs. They have the analysts talking. They have everything to keep you entertained. There's nothing. And it's not like you can even see, even with the good view we had, it's not like you could see Jim Brown at all when he was talking, when he was introducing the Browns pick. Like every magical little moment that you got on the broadcast, you could not see at the draft.
Well,
you just heard.
Twitter was ahead by like five picks at all times.
Yeah,
true.
To put that in perspective, though, Chris is like 5'7", so
six.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was difficult for you to see anything.
And I was up on like the ledge too. Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't make it more than like 20 minutes on day three because it was super hot out. There was nothing to see. Some of us didn't even know any of the players' names.
They kept coming. They kept like kicking it out to like, you know, the space station and Indianapolis and those goddamn orangutans and Las Vegas and everything else. There was nothing there except for like Nate Burleson, a couple other dipshits from the NFL network who were trying to yuck it up the whole time.
There was one other person and it was a nice lady.
Yeah.
The reason why we weren't down there longer was because we weren't close enough for Chris to yell at Mel Kiper.
Yeah, that's really the guiding praxis of all this. I cannot call Mel Kiper a bitch.
And dude, if we weren't there, if we didn't go back to the hotel room on day one, we wouldn't have seen highlights of Mel Kiper losing his mind over Myles Garrett, the paleontologist.
My point for the last month has been he can be as good as he wants to be. You say, well, anybody can be as good as he wants to be. No, they can't because they don't have freakish talent like Myles Garrett. And if he wants to be great, he can be great. And I think when you look at Myles Garrett, you say, well, is he focused on football? He has other interests. So what? He's a multi-dimensional kid. He's a great kid. He reads novels. He's into dinosaurs, paleontology, okay? He's well-rounded into music, Journey, Hall & Oates, Motown. I mean, what's not to like about a kid who has interests beyond football?
Anyways, only regret from actually being in Philly is not being there for day three when the Lions drafted their future backup quarterback.
Should we take a break and start actually talking about the Lions and how they drafted?
That sounds good.
We should. We've got a very long podcast today. I apologize ahead of time. Stick around. We'll be right back. There's a lot here. We've got a mailbag. We've got seven rounds of picks to go through. Are we going to laugh at the Bears? You absolutely know goddamn well we are laughing at the Bears. So stick around. PODcast rolls around next. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along. We've talked enough about Philly and POD. Let's talk about the Lions and Philly. We saw on day one there from the comfort of our hotel room, where we were able to do a Facebook Live. Thanks for nothing, Jeremy. We were able to see the Lions take Jerod Davis, linebacker out of Florida.
Jared.
God damn it. This is going to be exactly like with Jeff Schwartz, isn't it? Here, I'm just going to get his name wrong. G-off. I'm just going to be doing that for like the whole offseason.
Goff Schwartz.
Goff. I had to keep asking you guys how to say Jeff's name like every time we podcasted.
Aren't you glad he got cut?
Kinda.
As if there's not one way of saying Jeff.
It's not spelled the right way. It looks like Geoff.
Okay.
It's German, okay? Anyway, Jerod Davis, I think, was the right pick for the Lions. Good place in the draft for it. The proper position. Great skill. This was a very unsexy pick. I think the only remarkable things was just watching how the board unfolded in front of the Lions and how they were able to pick Jerod Davis. I mean, obviously, every mock was saying, yeah, this would be the guy, but it was kind of fun to watch it all play out.
It was, and I agree with you that I think it was the right pick, and also that it's an unsexy pick. You know, if I had to put a grade on it, probably like something like a B, but I hate grading. The big controversy around the pick, though, was Reuben Foster was still there on the board, and a lot of people, I think, thought that he should have been the pick there. I just couldn't go for it. The more I dig into this, you realize, you know, Bob Quinn announced in an interview on, I think it was Sunday morning or Saturday night, that Jerod Davis is going to be playing middle linebacker. You know, he's going to be the quarterback of this defense. So you want a high character guy doing that, a smart guy, a guy that knows how, you know, the playbook works. He can take a new playbook, absorb it, and be smart about it. That you look at Jerod Davis, he's perfect for that. You look at Reuben Foster, red flag after red flag after red flag after red flag, like one is enough to not consider him at the position. But he had four or five, you know, shoulder injury, concussions, the whole combine issue, failing the drug test. Like, do you really want that guy quarterbacking your defense? There's also questions about him being able to do the X's and O's. That's not the guy you want leading this defense, right?
No, and so did you say you gave it a B for Jerod Davis? Was there any other guy that you really wanted there?
There wasn't. There really wasn't. It's just not a pick that's... I have some issues with the way he sees the game in terms of life, his instincts, that sort of thing. But at the same time, there really wasn't a guy I liked better. That doesn't mean that I would give it an A necessarily, though.
I was just waiting with bated breath, hoping that the Lions weren't taking David Joku. And when that didn't happen, and literally anybody else besides him was the pick, I was pretty darn excited about it.
Yeah, and we were just sitting there, like all these offensive guys going off the board. All of a sudden, Malik Hooker's still there at like 14. Jonathan Allen's still there. And while I really wanted Jerod Davis still, I was still just like praying that Malik Hooker would fall to 21 because he would have been such a good addition to this team. Well, I gave it an A, so I was pretty happy with the pick.
I know for a while we were also entertaining Hassan Reddick falling to the Lions, but alas, it didn't happen.
Yeah, he went 13 to the Cardinals, who had a pretty good draft themselves.
Yeah.
Was there at any point since we had that run, I think it was what, like 7 of the first 10 were offensive players or something like that? Was there any point where you thought the Lions should have at least thought of the idea of trading up?
Maybe, like, the one guy I would have traded up for was probably Malik Hooker. I think I mentioned it to MLive's Nate Atkins, that if Malik Hooker was there in the mid to late teens, maybe I would consider trading up for him. And he said, like, no way that's going to happen, and alas, it did happen. But probably no other guy I would want to trade up for.
Yeah, I was on board with trading up for Malik Hooker, maybe if he fell, like, a couple of more spots, but... I, of course, also didn't want the Lions to have to give up too much to move up. And, you know, from watching other teams move up in the draft this year, clearly teams are still willing to pay quite a hefty price tag in order to move up. So I was real happy with the Jared Davis pick. I think that, you know, was he the best talent available there? Not necessarily. I don't think he was the best player available, but he was also a player of position that the Lions really needed to upgrade at. And I think that he is potentially going to be like a three down linebacker. He has a lot of rangy athleticism. He seems like the kind of guy who can play sideline to sideline or drop back in coverage. And that's just the guy they needed. And Reuben Foster was that guy too, but I think that Reuben Foster just had a lot more concerns, like you guys mentioned. So I was real happy with the Jared Davis pick.
I mean, like, it's always going to be measured against Reuben Foster. It's not as bad of people were using the Aaron Donald word. Some of the more downer types, but I think you're way overreacting if you're doing that. This was fine. This was perfectly fine. He's of a comparable skill to Reuben Foster. Don't worry too much about it. I thought this was the right pick. And speaking of another Florida guy, I think that's where some people started to get a little antsy about the draft was Tease Tabor. Am I saying that name right, at least?
You are. I mean, if you can't say Tease right, you can always say Jalen.
Is that like his...
That's his real name. He actually gave himself, or he asked for the T's nickname, so I don't know how you guys feel about that.
That's fine. Yeah, so T's Tabor, second round pick, corner out of Florida. Two Florida Gators go into the Lions, so we are now the Gator Lions. But people were very split on this pick. Can any of y'all explain to the audience who might not be tuning in, maybe they're tuning in for the first time, they don't understand why Lionsland is split on Tabor?
I guess I could go ahead since I'm the draft guy. So everybody loves their measurables. God bless Kent, he's our measurable guy, and I think he kind of might have hammered down the point with his RAS stuff. And once you see, I mean, everything is warranted, because once you look at trend analysis, there really aren't many corners that have succeeded in the NFL that have run a 4.62 or slower, which is what Tease ran at the combine. And then you look at his pro day, where he ran as low as a 4.75 by some people's measurements. So a lot of people were unhappy with that because he's a slow corner, but a lot of people were happy with it because Quinn said that he wants to look at playmakers. That's exactly what Tease is. He's a playmaking cornerback. He accumulated 8 interceptions over his career. He just has really good instincts. So, I mean, it was a controversial pick for those facts.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those instances where it's tape versus measurements. And, unfortunately, like you mentioned, Alex, like, the numbers are staggering in terms of his measurables. Like, he has to beat some serious odds with that 40 right. time. And the question is, you know, one of the things that needs to be considered as well is his hamstring issue. He said at the combine he had tweaked his hamstring, and that kind of affected his times, all of his measurables at the combine. And then Ian Rappaport came out with an interesting report that I have not heard anything else about since he said it, that he suffered a serious hamstring issue while working out for the Lions specifically, and then didn't work out for anybody else.
Yeah, I find that kind of funny how people are pointing to that, like, oh, it's okay, it's because of the hamstring, so we don't have to overreact about the speed, but then you're like, well, he also seriously hurt his hamstring, so that's not exactly a good thing, like, that's still a serious injury right now.
Right. But I'm curious, like, I know we all have our issues with Ian Rappaport, but the fact that, like, this has not been brought up at all by anybody, the beat writers, the coaches, nobody, I'm starting to kind of worry about the credibility of that report.
I'm not insanely concerned about the 40 time, because the 40 time at the combine was still 4.62, and a few people on Twitter brought up some of Kent's handy dandy RAS cards and the measurables between some other corners that are more so zone corners. They've had some pretty successful careers in the NFL. Josh Norman ran in the 4.6s. Asante Samuel ran in the 4.6s. I agree with the fact that he's going to have to break some trends in order to be a, you know, more successful corner. But at the same time, Quinn had a really good quote, you know, saying that he said instincts and reactionary athleticism are more important when evaluating a cornerback than time speeds. Do I think that he's a 4.7 type guy? I don't think so. I mean, just from watching some highlights, I don't think he's nearly that slow. I have to buy in on some of the hamstring talk. I don't understand how his 40 time would dip a whole like millisecond and a half going from the combine to the pro day. So I think that there's something up with that. For a team that picked Jared Davis over Reuben Foster in the first round, because clearly there may have been some concerns about the medical things, that I think they probably did their homework on Tease and that their medical stuff checks out, and maybe they know something that, you know, some other teams really don't.
So let me ask this then, because we know Davis is starting right away in 2017. He's absolutely going Mike. What's the outlook do you guys have on Tease's role with the team? Like, because we know it's Darius Slay, and probably opposite him is probably Nevin Lawson. Like, where does Tease kind of fit in right now?
Yeah, I think for all rookie corners, it's that might be the one position where it's like extremely hard for them to get the starting position right away. I mean, we've heard it so many times that there's such a huge learning curve for cornerbacks coming into the NFL. I mean, I'm not the biggest Nevin Lawson fan, but I would have to think that he's going to have the job right away still coming out of camp. I would consider Tease to be more of like an eventual starter. Maybe he could win it before his sophomore year, but I don't think he's going to wrestle it away from Nevin Lawson right out of the gate.
I'd have to agree with you there, but it'll be interesting to see if, like, I can already see first couple weeks of Lions defense comes out flat. Everyone's already, you know, like, get Nevin Lawson the hell out of there. We need Tease in there. That sort of impatience is going to happen, and people are just going to have to deal with it because, like you said, it's such a steep learning curve for cornerbacks that are just entering the league. So I think by next year, the beginning of next year, it would be a pretty big disappointment if he isn't the number two starter across from Darius Slay, but that's where he's going to be. He's going to be the outside corner. I don't think, even though he has some slot experience, I think he's projected to be that outside corner eventually.
I'm worried about how much Lions fans may pack on him and may kind of almost change their tune, because like how you pointed out today, Jeremy, today is national, what was it again?
I'm warming to this pick today.
Yeah, I'm warming to this pick, or I'm changing my tune on this guy. I think if Lion fans don't see him start at some point in this year, that they're going to be upset with the pick. And I want to remind people that, do we remember Darius Slay as a rookie? He had a lot of trouble adjusting to the NFL and a lot of trouble adjusting to off-man coverage. And I know that's kind of Tease's specialty, but you still have to adjust to the play speed of the NFL. So you need to be patient with the guy. And I think from seeing Bob Quinn pass on David Joku in the first round, I'm going to trust his evaluating process. And when he said to the Detroit News, he said that personally, he's probably watched more film on Tease Tabor than he's watched on any other player.
Yeah, I think he said 12 games worth.
Yeah, he said he went all the way back to 2015, and he said I can't sit here and say I've watched every play that he's ever played at Florida, but I've watched like several hours and dozens of games. So I think he saw what he needed to see to be confident in taking a guy like that, because we talked a little bit about this with the Jared Davis pick, but if it wasn't going to be Tease, then who did you guys want here at this pick?
Are you actually asking us here? If we're strictly talking corners, I really liked Chidobe Awuzie. I had Akello Witherspoon slightly above Tease, although they were pretty much neck and neck for me. There was some defensive ends, I think, that were still on the board, like Derek Rivers I really like. Obi Melifonwu was there. Josh Jones. Like, there were several guys that I liked more. So that's why I gave the pick a B+, not any higher. But I still like the pick. I mean,
and you're higher on Tease than a lot of guys, but just real quick for like the counters to those guys, Derek Rivers didn't go until Derek Rivers didn't go until 83, right to the Patriots. Yep. So he was a full round later. Because there are a lot of people who say that T shouldn't have been the pick, that you could have got him a round later, and that'll kind of be echoed kind of throughout the rest of Bob Quinn's draft. But even with Obi Melifonwu, like he there's a lot of tape of him like getting beat over the top. And if you want to talk about like instincts, and Bob Quinn's all about getting guys who are instinctual and playmakers, I would argue that Tease is a much better playmaker and, you know, instinct guy than Obi. But what do you think real quick, Jeremy?
I was just going to say, like, this second round was kind of full of a lot of surprises because we had our favorite sleepers, like Tanoh Passignon. He went 5-6 picks after Ortiz Tabor. I talked a lot about Dalvin Tomlinson and grabbing him in the fourth or fifth round. He went 2 picks after Ortiz Tabor. So I think a lot of our favorites went a lot earlier than we expected. And so the fact that Ortiz Tabor, a guy that people thought before the combine was potentially even a top 10 pick, Lions got him in the second round. You know, it's not bad value.
Well, that's a pretty good analysis there for the first two rounds. Got a lot more to cover. We're going to take another break here, and then it's on to talk about a wide receiver the Lions picked up, Kenny Golladay, and more from day 3. So stick around. We'll be right back. Continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, we're moving on down the days here. Let's talk about the end of day 2. Wide receiver out of Northern Illinois, Kenny Golladay. I was a little surprised the Lions ended up taking a wide receiver in the third round, but Ryan, I know you have some words on this in particular.
About Kenny Golladay? Absolutely. This was the pick that I was the least excited about, and I don't think you can really blame me, because show of hands real quick, how many of us did all of our homework on Kenny Golladay in preparation before day 3?
Oh, I thought you were going to brag about how you had taking a wide receiver in the first 4 picks as your bold predictions.
Well, some people in here don't believe that that's a bold prediction. So, I mean, I think that we could just skip right over that.
Yeah, some of us had it listed as like a top 5 need. So why wouldn't you address that in the first 3 rounds? But yeah, like you, this is a guy that was completely off my radar. My radar, admittedly, is a little small before the draft, but I honestly didn't know who this guy was.
I don't think you're alone, though. I don't think you're alone by any means, because Alex, were you ready for Kenny Golladay to get picked on day 3 or day 2 in round 3?
No, I mean, Kenny Golladay is certainly a name I've heard. Not one of the top 160 guys that I looked at, so I can't say that I looked too deeply into him. But like I was saying before, he almost reminds me of like what the Lions wanted in Marvin Jones. I mean, they're like similar size, can't create separation, pretty fast. But the one thing that worries me the most about Golladay is his lack of route running ability. I mean, he only ran about 4 routes at Northern Illinois, a couple of those routes being like a hitch route and a drag route, which, I mean, not hard to do that. So I don't think he's really going to come in here and earn a number 3 receiver role anytime soon. I think he's got kind of a long way to go. So I don't know. I gave it a C. It was my lowest grade. Hopefully he'll prove me wrong.
I was just saying, what did you guys think about the trade down at the time? Because that, to me, that deserves some analysis there. That was a big move. Obviously, Bob Quinn's first draft day trade picked up a 4th, moved down about, I think it was 11 spots from 85 to 96. There were some talent on the board, and between 85 and 96, a lot of people that...
Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt went in 86. Eddie Vanderdoes was another guy that I think some people wanted. Defensive tackle, Donta Foreman. For the Michigan guys, Jordan Lewis went there to the Cowboys at 92. Was that a good time to trade down, in your opinion?
I was all right with the trade down because Derek Rivers had gone off the board 2 picks before that by, you know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots. So after they took Rivers, it was kind of, I was kind of hoping that he'd be there at 85, because if he was, that was going to be like the perfect way to hit another need and to get a guy who I thought was potentially like a, you know, late first round, early second round pick. So I was really high on Derek Rivers. When Derek Rivers wasn't there, obviously the next name that I immediately jumped to was Kareem Hunt, because I thought getting him in the third round would be, I thought that that would be heck of a talent, and I was willing to throw my bold predictions article out the window for Kareem Hunt.
kind of interesting that both those guys, though, were positions that Lions ended up not taking at all, defensive end and running back.
At all. I mean, we can get into that later, but yeah, I was totally fine with the trade after I saw Rivers go off the board, and then once I saw Kareem Hunt go at 86, the pick after the Lions would have had, I immediately got upset and more regretful, but I can't say that taking Kenny Golladay eased any of that pain and regret, so I drank beer at the English pub that we were at.
If there's one thing that makes me feel okay. It's his combination of size and speed. Because I think he ran a 4.5 at 6, you know, being 6'4", that's pretty impressive.
His weight-adjusted scores are pretty good.
Yeah. But like you said, it seems like a project, and I'm not sure, even though this was at the bottom of the third round, I'm not sure you're getting good value for getting a project right there.
He's gonna be the biggest receiver on the roster. At 6'4", he's a good 2 inches taller than Marvin Jones, and he has some decent arm length. Hopefully that ability to gain separation is something that can be coached up in terms of, you know, getting separation off the line of scrimmage. But
that's like the fan thing for people to say, though, right? When they don't like a pick, well, maybe he can be coached up. I mean, I'm with you.
I'm hoping to be optimistic. Yeah, right.
All right. Next.
Let's try. Yeah, let's go on to, I believe this is day two now. Well, no, we're still on day two. That's right.
No, well, we're going into day three. Yeah.
Day three. I always get these mixed up because for some reason I thought round two was part of day one, but it wasn't.
Used to be. Too many beers.
Yeah, used to be. Jalen Reeves-Maybin was the top of the fourth round. Kind of a curious pick. I really want to know from you guys what you're kind of expecting from him. Like, is this another one of these Bob Quinn MOs to pick a guy who can really play on special teams? Is he going to start it all this year? Is he a project? Is he going to eventually angle for Tahir Whitehead's place in the linebacker core? What do you see coming out of Jalen Reeves-Maybin?
I think he's actually I think he's got a better chance of eventually taking over what DeAndre Levy's spot was. I know he's obviously not DeAndre Levy, but I see him as a smaller guy, more of a will linebacker because he's fast. I saw a little bit on tape that he can actually cover pretty well. I know the shoulder injury was kind of a big deal, but I think there was a tweet out there from... forget who it was, but his doctor said that he was actually cleared and ready to play right away. So he has a chance to earn a spot right away because he can play right away, but I don't really see him beating Tahir Whitehead out right away. Probably more of a special teams guy.
I think the special teams thing is kind of a easy thing to point at and say, well, he can do this, and at least we have him and he can do that. Because Bob Quinn mentioned that in a press conference saying that once you start to get in these later rounds, these players have to at least provide some kind of production on special teams. And then anything that they do well situationally on defense, the defense, Terrell Austin, they're in charge of getting the most out of that player. So I think when you think of what Jalen Reeves-Maybin will be able to contribute immediately, it's special teams. And then beyond that, whatever you can get from him in defense, if you want to bring him in as a, like blitz specialist guy because he has a knack for running downhill and getting in the backfield, you bring him in to do that. If you want to bring him in because he has some good like lateral movement to him, you know, bring him in for some protection things, bring him in for protection schemes or playing on passing downs. Sure. I mean, whatever they see as his biggest situational value, they can use him there, but he's also one of those quote unquote Bob Quinn special teams aces, or at least he projects to be that guy. So his shoulder, like Alex said, seems to be healthy. Jeremy, where do you think, if he does play on defense at all, where do you think that he'll play or maybe even end up playing down the line?
Well, I think you mentioned it. I think he could very well take Tahir Whitehead's job. Not this year, but this is the last year Tahir Whitehead's contract, and I'm a huge fan of this pick. The more I think about it, the more I love it. I love doubling up at linebacker this early in the draft. I love the idea of getting depth. I love the idea that Thurston Armbrister is now most likely not going to make the team. No offense to him, but
no, you're definitely trying to offend him there. You're absolutely trying to, whether you like it or not. That's yeah.
I really like this pick. He probably would have gone higher had it not been for the shoulder injury that knocked out pretty much his entire 2016 season. He's got all the athletic tools, even though he's a little bit undersized. The fact that so many people mention him and DeAndre Levy in the same breath, that gets me excited. And I know people will say, yeah, because he's got the shoulder injury, blah, blah, blah. Like, fuck off. This is exciting. Yeah.
look, it's going to be a positive comparison to DeAndre Levy as long as Jeremy Reisman never gets a Jalen Reeves-Maybin jersey.
Nope. I will not. Don't worry. Too long of a name.
Good.
Can I ask where his potential seeding would be in the name bracket? Because I think he's got a very strong name with Jalen Reeves Maben. The hyphenated last name is always a welcome addition to the name bracket, I feel like.
Boy, this was a good draft class for the name bracket, I've got to say. We're going to get to some more of them here soon.
I wouldn't even say he'd necessarily be in the top three of this draft class, to be honest.
Sure, yeah. Wait, for the Lions draft class?
For the Lions draft class.
Oh yeah. No, I wouldn't even say top three. Yeah, yeah.
Would Tease count? Are we going by Jalen Tabor?
Well, that's a discussion to have down the line, but...
Okay, yeah, let's just keep going then.
All right, let's go to one who's probably not making the name tournament, but one I believe we are all very excited for. Tight end out of Toledo. A lot of Mac guys here. Michael Roberts. You know, we didn't get to Kareem Hunt, but we got the tight end out of Toledo, Michael Roberts. Ryan, of course, wants props for calling stuff correctly, so he and Jerry had it on our pre-draft podcast, so shout out to them. Very big hands, but let's not make it seem like that's a freak of nature thing, because he also caught a lot of touchdowns.
16 touchdowns last year.
16 touchdowns. I believe that was good enough for... Did that lead the conference, I believe?
I think it was... I mean, it had to have been at least top three in the conference. I don't know if he led it, but he was up there.
It was either led touchdowns in the conference or, like, red zone touchdowns or some other qualifier. Yeah.
All in the red zone, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. He was their big red zone package. And when I mean big, he is big. He is a very tall, very physical, very heavy, wide tight end. And that means he can also block, too. So he's very versatile. And I think he's a great complement to the tight end core, along with Eric Ebron, something the Lions have not really had. He's someone a little more flexible.
Those big hands weren't only used to catch touchdown passes. I mean, he could use them to just latch on to guys and toss them to the side. I mean, he had some really good flashes as a blocker. His technique isn't always completely sound, but I mean, he's already pretty much better than what we have as a blocking tight end right now. So I think that was almost an A+ pick. The only criticism I would have with that pick is that George Kittle was still on the board. I liked Kittle more, but I mean, really, I can't really complain overall.
I think someone pointed this out, but I think when it comes to Roberts and some of these other guys, especially Kenny Golladay, another Mac thing, and Ryan, maybe you can answer this. Does this feel like this is Bob Quinn kind of benefiting from having, you know, that scouting background? Because these are both like guys from the region's backyard, right? Like these, like you got Detroit. The MAC championship that comes through Detroit, the MAC conference has a lot of ties to Detroit. It has a lot of ties to the Detroit Lions, too. Like, the Lions really back the Mid-American Conference. Toledo, of course, you know, about an hour south of Detroit. NIU is not that is, you know, a couple hours extra, I believe. Like, do you think that when you saw Kittle on the board, you saw Roberts, you think maybe that was Quinn, his scouting background, he had the better knowledge and insight to Roberts?
Potentially. I can't say with any certainty whether or not it was, but you know, it doesn't seem like he shies away from obviously taking these smaller school players. You know, even guys like, you know, Miles Killebrew in the last draft, and especially this draft with Kenny Golladay, and we'll get into the corner that they drafted in the later rounds, and you know, Michael Roberts, these Mac guys and these guys from these, you know, quote unquote smaller conferences, but like we said earlier, Corey Davis was the number 5 pick in the draft and he went to Western Michigan. So that was kind of, I don't want to say that was kind of like an MO of Bill Belichick in New England, but I mean, it's always kind of the joke that like the Rutgers was kind of like a pipeline for a lot of, you know, Patriots talent. And, you know, you maybe can make the same argument that regionally, close to here in Detroit, that Bob Quinn sourcing a lot of their talent. But two things about Michael Roberts real quick that really impressed me. One was the story that we heard about him on NFL Network's telecast, talking about how not only him, but his mother as well worked like 2, 3, 4 jobs just, you know, to support their own family. And, you know, Roberts was a walk-on at Toledo. So I think it's one of those great stories. He seems like a real great kid.
Is he the one that he made his own highlight package to pimp himself out?
He very well could be. I believe it. Like, I mean, so, you know, his father spent time in jail. He was suspended from elementary school. He had a speech impediment and ADD. Like, I mean, he had virtually everything in the world going against him. And so I think this is just a great story. So I'm super excited. And to add to the fact that I think it's a great story, I think he's a highly talented guy. I think he's going to be the tight end two day one. The one stat that really, you know, impresses me the most is for all of the people who are so hard on Eric Ebron, we talked about Michael Roberts' big hands. He only dropped 3 passes out of 51 catchable targets in 2016. So he's a guy who does a good job of bringing the ball in with those big mitts.
We need to move on here to some more picks, but real quick out of this, and I know, but you brought up Eric Ebron. Like, what does this mean for Ebron's future? Obviously, we're not going to be able to answer this because it's Monday. This is coming out on Tuesday. We don't know what's going to happen with his option. And there's no real good way to cover his option on this podcast because of the timing of the release. But option or not, what do you see this means for Eric Ebron? I know he tweeted out something like, okay, I see how it is. Let's go. But I he's been good natured about it. But like, I don't think he's going to take over that spot from Ebron, certainly not right away. But what would this potentially mean for Ebron?
I think nothing, to be honest. Michael Roberts doesn't have the same skill set that Ebron does at all. He's not the crazy mismatch that Ebron is with his speed, his power, his size. He obviously has the size, but like, Ebron is getting better at route running. He's getting better as a receiver. I think if anything, this has something to do with the job that Darren Fells has. I think Darren Fells is still the number two tight end in 2017, but Darren Fells is only on a 1-year contract. If Michael Roberts works out, Darren Fells is not getting re-signed next year. I don't think this affects Ebron at all, though.
If anything, it just alleviates some of the pressure off Ebron. Like, now you can just kind of tell him, like, just go out there, run some routes, catch some balls. You know, he doesn't have to be, like, the primary blocking guy because all the other guys suck at it. And they're getting injured, so we need Ebron to be our primary blocker out there, which is something he's not very good at. So, I mean, like Jeremy said, like, it's not going to affect him negatively at all.
I think that the Lions will definitely pick up Ebron's option. I think that he will be with the team, you know, not only next year, but the year after. And to add to that, say in the event that they don't pick up his option, tight end will be a position that the Lions could potentially target in the draft next year, because I think through and through, I think Michael Roberts is the number two tight end. Like, he's a really good guy. He's an inline blocker who has the ability to be moved around and, you know, catch passes situationally. But he does not bring to the table, like what Jeremy said, he does not bring to the table the same skill set that Eric Ebron does. So he's a very good complimentary tight end, like very good.
And let's just say, like, if they don't pick up Ebron's option, that doesn't mean he's gone next year. It means he's not signed, but, like, if he has a good 2017, Lions could certainly offer him another contract. He just becomes an unrestricted free agent. It's not like, you know, he's done. It's not a good sign for him, but,
it's a gamble.
It'd be a gamble, but it would also kind of light a fire under Ebron, you know, contract year.
Saw that with Fairley before.
I was gonna say that was what the Lions did with Fairley, and it kind of ended up burning him in the long term. But
yeah, Mayhew, whatever.
Wasn't that long ago?
Seems like light years though. Let's take another quick break, and then it's on to the rest and some mild observations from the draft itself. And then after that, we'll get to your questions in the mailbag. So stick around. Rolling right along on the Pride of Detroit podcast. We're starting to get into the deep rounds now. We just covered Michael Roberts. Let's talk about Jamal Agnew. Once again, I hate to bring up the special team stuff, but this is what this guy does. There are some great highlight reels out of him doing some crazy stuff on punt returns, kick blocks, and I think he'll be on the depth chart for corner, but I think this is far more, once again, Jeremy, about special teams play.
Yeah, I mean, the guy ran a sub 4.3 40, and if you watch, he has a highlight reel of just him returning punts. The dude is blazing fast, but this was also kind of a curious pick to me, because now all of a sudden we have a really crowded depth chart at cornerback, and I'm not sure where he fits in. Could he make the team just based on being a returner? it's certainly possible. Obviously, the Lions need to replace Andre Roberts. I thought they were going to use a wide receiver where they have a little more flexibility to take that role. And they have a couple candidates in DJ Jones and Jace Billingsley. So I guess I'm a little surprised by this pick. I could even see this guy not making the team, to be honest.
Well, let me ask, because he is kind of speedy there. Would he maybe fight for a position with against, like, say, a Quandre Diggs for the slot corner?
I don't think so, personally. I don't think his cover skills are that polished enough. And a fifth-round pick, I don't think you would expect to take Diggs' job right away. Especially when, I mean, they got DJ Hayden for that kind of purpose, too. Like, the depth there. That's kind of why I'm curious about this pick. To me, he's right now seventh on the depth chart in cornerback, behind Slay, Tabor, Lawson, Diggs, Hayden, Batamosi, then Agnew.
Yeah, and we only kept five cornerbacks last year, but you mentioned Diggs, Jeremy. Do you think Diggs is like almost a lock to make the roster? Because that's one of the names that I've seen from a lot of fans saying that he's going to get cut.
It's certainly possible. It certainly brings into question that, absolutely. It's going to be, you know, we've talked a lot about this off air. There are going to be a lot of interesting camp battles, and I think this pick is very intriguing in that manner. I don't know what's going to happen at cornerback, except that Alex Carter is not going to make the team.
Yeah. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think Agnew's going to make the team. If he doesn't, obviously he's going to get, you know, stashed on the practice squad for sure. Whether or not they'll have to do some maneuvering to keep him, whether or not he'll try to be poached, because I think undeniably, like, he has speed. Like, he has speed for days. He's a track guy, you know, 100-meter champion. He's got that burst speed. He's got that short speed. He ran two sub-4.4 40s. You know, he doesn't have the ability to be so versatile, though. So, like I said earlier, he's one of those Bob Quinn late round guys who, okay, what can he do for me on special teams? He can, you know, he can play on punt block or on, you know, kick or on field goal block, and he can come off the edge. He can provide pressure.
Probably a gunner too, right? I don't know if he has experience as a gunner, but
he's blocked a few kicks actually in his career.
As a gunner?
Oh, as a I don't know.
Yeah. So he has a special teams thing going for him, and he can be used as a special teams guy for punt returns or kick returns. But the other thing too, though, is that now, all right, what can you do for me on defense? He's too small to play on the outside. He's 5'9" on a really good day. So he's going to play inside, so it's definitely going to be nickel corner. So you get into that conversation of, okay, you have Quandre Diggs, you have DJ Hayden, and now you have Jamal Agnew, so...
But, and then you also, I mean, we've talked about, you know, Tabor going to the outside and moving Nevin Lawson inside, so that's even another guy that could contend at slot corner.
Yeah, I mean, if that happens anytime soon, then yeah, you got a lot of slot corners.
Sure, exactly. They're gonna keep... how many defensive backs total? 10?
Usually about 10, yeah. 10 or 11.
So, I don't know. I think in the end of the day, he'll make the team.
All right. Well, on from Agnew towards Jeremiah Ledbetter, who we're talking about...
Bedwetter.
I was going to say, this one's going to be a hell of a pick in the name tournament.
Like, definitely.
I don't know how he...
one seed out of this draft class.
Really? You think, is that the top name in the draft, or have we not gotten to it yet?
No, it's in our draft. That's yeah.
It. Yeah. Okay. I can get that. Once again, versatile guy. The Lions finally address.
Hell of an athlete. I mean, that's pretty much what you want in these late round guys, right?
Yeah. This is where the Lions finally pick up a defensive end, but I don't think anyone's looking at Ledbetter and saying, okay, you're going to be coming in opposite Ziggy. It's not happening. Especially not right here, but
I've seen most project him as a defensive tackle, actually.
Yeah, that's the thing. He can play almost anywhere on the line. But then, yeah. I mean, if he wants to play as defensive tackle, though, Alex, like, Lions already got a lot of defensive tackles that are projected to really do...
Yeah, I think most people are saying that he's a defensive tackle, though. We have all of these one techs. We have all these guys that can plug gaps. Lodinata, all those guys, run stuffers, but we really need somebody who can be more explosive. I don't know a whole lot about Ledbetter right now, but maybe he's explosive enough. Maybe the athleticism means that he can disrupt the passer. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think the absolute ceiling of this guy is maybe potentially 2-3 years down the line, he's your three-tech starter. That's probably a bit too high of expectations for him, but this is a guy, you know, using Kent's RAS, he scored a 9.05 at defensive tackle. So he's got all the athletic traits that you want out of that fast, quick guy. I believe he had 5.5 sacks last year, 7.5 tackles for loss. That's pretty good for a defensive tackle. And that was his first year at defensive tackle. I think he had played defensive end the year before. So I'm a little excited about this pick. I want to, you know, remain kind of calm. It's a fifth rounder. You shouldn't get your hopes that high for a fifth rounder. But he fills a pretty big need for this team. But he seems to project to be more of a project, and as is everyone pretty much in the fifth round or later.
All right, now we're here to the hidden jewel of the draft. I'm doing this just to piss off Jeremy Reisman. We don't explain how our animosities really come to be on the podcast that well. Just know that Brad Kaya is absolute revenge for Jake Rudock.
I'll let Ryan talk for about 5 minutes on this if you want.
Alex, tell me where to start on Brad Kaya.
Don't start at Felicia. Start at not Jake Rudock.
Okay. Can we probably at least put the Felicia thing? We're not going to talk about Felicia.
No, we can put that thing to rest forever and for always, because can't you just imagine that the guy's caught enough of it his entire life? Like, can we just let it die?
Yeah, the beat writer's already beaten into the fucking ground within, like, the first couple of hours.
I think it was either Justin Rogers or Kyle Mikey who was like, we got to ask 7 questions to Brad Kaya, and 5 of them were about his mom.
That's disrespectful.
It's entirely disrespectful, and, I mean, white people have already appropriated it enough into their lexicon, so we can move past it.
And spell it completely wrong, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, we all did.
And here we are talking about it way too long. So let's go on to Brad Kaya, the actual quarterback. So at the beginning of draft season, Brad Kaya was probably one of the top 3 quarterbacks, if not the number 1 guy on a lot of people's boards, projected to be the number 1 overall pick. And then his season at Miami just didn't go as planned. Okay. A lot of the progression people plan to see from Kaya just didn't end up happening. So what? He becomes a projected 3rd to 4th round pick, and he lasts to the very end of the 6th round. And I think the Lions got an absolute steal in a guy who's still really young. He is only 21 years old, and he's going to turn 22 right after the season starts. So he's a full 2 years younger than Jake Rudock. I think that they bring very similar skill sets, although I think Kaya definitely has a slightly stronger arm than Rudock does. I'm going to be really interested to watch this, you know, camp battle start and kind of finish, because I think Kaya has the inside track. He's familiar. Jake Rudock does have 1 year with the team. They obviously did value him enough to see him as a guy that they didn't want the Bears to poach off the practice squad. And thank God the Bears didn't get to poach him off the practice squad, because then we wouldn't have Mike Glennon and Mitch Trubisky in our lives. So I kind of am thankful that Jake Rudock is on the Lions team. Although I'm going to upset a lot of people by saying I think Kaya has, like I said, the inside track to eventually win the backup quarterback position. You guys talk about Brad Kaya and I'll make my retorts.
Yeah, so, like, okay, I love watching quarterbacks. I know it's, you know, it's sports talk radio-y kind of shit, but I love doing the quarterback stuff, because it's always just fascinating just how a lot of it goes. There's just so many ways to break down what happened in Miami. Like, I mean, part of it you could say, because I know you were saying, Ryan, like, this was a guy, you know, projected first for this year, but his decline almost started a little earlier before that, a couple years before then. Part of that's to be blamed for on tight ends coach Al Golden, Lions tight ends coach Al Golden.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of it is to blame on having 3 coaches in 3 years.
Yeah, and you could tell, too, he started to lose his confidence there. Like, he would get happy feet. His development got stunted a little bit. But he was always going to be the next big thing coming up, because he lit up everything. People always saying, just wait another year. Brad Kaya is going to get the development he needs. It never really panned out the way it was intended. But, man, I don't know. Like, if you can do a reclamation project on that, it's great. I don't want to say the closest analogy I have is to Christian Hackenberg, because God, I'm just saying, but Hackenberg was kind of that guy who was always kind of, like that next big thing.
Similar situation, sure, yeah.
Yeah, 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 same tropes were used. It didn't fall completely off the map like Hackenberg did. So I think that's, and I think that Al Golden connection is a little important there too, maybe, I don't know. Not quite sure what to make of that, but I do think I think you're right, Ryan. It is a bit of a steal, and it's not ever going to really take the place of Stafford, but I think this is probably closer to, you know, this is Bob Quinn's whole QB draft a QB every year kind of philosophy really paying off here. Yeah, kind of going open box special on Brad Kaya.
Let me address all of your points, because there's a lot I want to tackle here. I do think that the Al Golden connection is important. I think Bob Quinn said himself it was pretty big in determining the kind of character that this guy was. They were very happy with the kind of leadership quality that he has, the smarts that he has for the game. And I think the fact that he's been in three different, you know, he's had three different coaches is important. Like, he has a very knowledge now of certain systems, and he's mostly played in a professional, you know, an NFL system there in Florida.
Real quick, let's define what pro style means, because it means that he took snaps from under center and he ran a lot of play action. So those two things are very important, and even Quinn mentioned that in his evaluation process, saying, like, there isn't going to be this big transition period now. So he's one of those guys who's, like, more NFL ready than, say, like, a Pat Mahomes is.
Sure. And yeah, you're right. That is definitely important. But let's be real about this guy. In terms of athleticism and, you know, accuracy, arm strength, all this stuff, he's well below average. And I honestly think you guys are crazy to think he's going to win out the backup job in his first year. The fact that the Lions would risk having a sixth round rookie being the primary backup for Stafford, that is insanity to me. If they do that and Stafford gets injured, there is no way he's seeing the field. They are signing Jay Cutler off the street.
No, I think they'd keep three quarterbacks on the roster.
That's potentially true.
Because I don't think you can put Brad Kaya on a practice squad like you could Jake Rudock. He could get poached.
Why? He was a sixth round. He was drafted in the same round.
Cause, dude.
Because you guys hate Jake Rudock. Let's be honest. You guys hate Jake Rudock more than you like Brad Kaya. Just say it.
I'm not going to confirm or deny anything you just said.
I'm going to be real quick too for a second and say that if you want to say that Brad Kaya's arm strength is below average, okay, that's fine. If you want to say that his athleticism is below average, that's fine. If you want to say his accuracy is shaky, that's fine. You also just described Jake Rudock, okay? So the only thing that Jake Rudock really has on Brad Kaya at this point is being with the Lions for 1 year.
That's huge, though. That's huge for your backup quarterback.
I'm seriously trying to be objectionable as possible. And, like, yes, do I think that experience has something to do? Yes, and that counts. That's a check. That's a mark in Jake Rudock's column. With that being said, do I think that Chris's point of maybe they carry three quarterbacks? Maybe that might happen if they come to their senses and cut Michael Burton, who doesn't do anything on game day or even, you know, participate in, like, game day activities or contribute to the 53-man roster in any sort of way. I'm sorry. If they used a fullback, Michael Burton would be awesome. But would I rather have them keep Michael Burton or carry three quarterbacks? I would rather have them have Brad Kaya because, like I said, he's 2 years younger than Jake Rudock. I think that what he brings to the table, and I'm going to have an article tomorrow out on Pride of Detroit. I think you guys should take a look at it just because I bring up a lot of interesting things where Kaya and Rudock have a lot of similarities, but I think that Kaya just has a little bit more than Rudock, and it's something in the intangibles, and it's something that just when I watch Jake Rudock in the preseason, he did nothing to, like, say, hey, I have confidence that if this guy is going to be the backup quarterback going into next year, that the same scenario that Jeremy just laid out where he said, okay, if Stafford were to, you know, God forbid he goes down with an injury and can't play, I think that they would go and they would try to get a veteran quarterback and bring him in over having Jake Rudock play for them.
I agree, but like you saw how slow they took Jake Rudock along, right? Like, they were very careful, like, not giving him a lot in the preseason. That's what I think they're going to do with Brad Kaya, which is why I would be very, very surprised if he's their backup in 2017.
One last difference I want to make is that Rudock played 2 years with Iowa, right? And then he transfers and plays for Jim Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fact that Jake Rudock is on an NFL roster is more of a testament to what Jim Harbaugh was able to do with Jake Rudock in 1 year at Michigan to clean up his technique, to clean up his ability to work like the underneath of the field and to make better reads and better throws, okay, to make safer and smarter decisions. I think that's more of a testament to how Jim Harbaugh was able to clean him up as a quarterback and send him off to the NFL than it is, you know, anything else.
All right, we haven't even gotten to Pat O'Connor. We really should.
It's fine, because we can talk about him in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, ready? Can we talk about Pat O'Connor starting now?
What position does he play? I don't even have it written.
Body. He's a body.
He's a defensive end body. Another guy that's super athletic, who thrived in a small school that has very little chance of making the team.
Should we just get on to the mailbag then?
Yeah.
Can we make quick mention that wasn't he Kenny Galladay's teammate in high school?
He was.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. You guys don't have any UDFAs you want to talk about, do you?
I think we should probably hit that up next podcast. We have loaded this one to the teeth. We haven't gotten to your mailbag yet. We're going to right now. Next podcast, we're going to be talking more undrafted free agents, more draft talk, list casting the draft. But we still have all your questions. We want to get to them. So stick around. Let's hit those up right now. Mail time, hashtag AskPOD to get your stuff into us or in the AskPOD posts when they go up. Fire them off to the comments. As always, we read the reviews first. Jeremy, we got a new review in. Let's hear it.
We got another 5-star, and this one comes from AMSE1421. His review is entitled Takes of Africa. He says, I'm old enough to remember before they made Toto's Africa our theme song. They're great then, they're great now. Listen to this wonderfully realistic take on the Detroit Lions. Also, their wrestling takes.
Oh, so he's promoting the wrestling takes in the reviews.
He's just letting people know that there are wrestling takes in this, so they should probably head elsewhere.
Well, you know that this podcast, I will tell you right now, this podcast is already 5 times better than the House of Horrors match between Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt on Payback.
I'm going to stay away from it because I know this is a trap and I know traps when I see them.
That's bait. All right, let's open up the mailbag. Let's go to D-Walk at No Pictures. Is Too Hearted the Miller Lite of Michigan?
How dare you insult Miller Lite, okay? Miller Lite is a better beer than Too Hearted Ale anyways, so.
Wow.
I like me some Miller Lite.
I would light beer. That's my like number one go to domestic beer.
Yeah, me so, too. Me too. Yeah.
And hold on. I know I probably said this in the past, but I'm not counting Canadian beers as domestic.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what Too Hearted is. That what it's called?
Yeah, it's
an ale.
It's from Bell's. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You can't go worse than Miller Lite unless you're going like Milwaukee's Beast.
What? Are you kidding me? Would you rather drink a Bud Light?
Yes.
The Beast is definitely way down there. So is Natty. So is Bush. But I mean, why are we even saying Beast and Miller Light in the same sentence? They're just not.
They're both.
No.
Gross.
Stop it.
Stop it, man.
Get some help.
Get some real bad help. Okay, I have a question for you guys while I'm digging through more questions. What is the proper reaction to the Bears drafting in the first round?
Man, we should have maybe done an entire podcast just on that. Just 30
we're
minutes
gonna
of
about
laughing.
This next, we're going to talk about this next week, too, but I really want to get in here because the story is coming out about how the Bears traded up from 3-2 to get Mitch Trubisky. I'm not going to call him Mitchell. Mitch Trubisky has just been hilarious. If you haven't seen them, go on Deadspin. go on Sports Illustrated, go on Monday Morning Quarterback. I'm sure they're all over the place, but these stories are hilarious.
You can just sum it up with one soundbite of Ryan Pace sounding like an idiot telling Trubisky to drive his beat-up car to the facility.
Or you could sum it up in one picture of Bob Quinn leaning back in his chair in glee.
With his fingers steepled, and he's like, oh, ho, ho.
Or you could sum it up in Mitchell Trubisky getting booed at a Bulls game.
That was awful.
That was not fair to him.
That was
like,
not fun.
Why did they think that was a good idea? Like, the Bulls were on the ropes. They were not in a good spot. They were about to lose that series to the Celtics, and they thought that dragging out the guy who got maybe the worst reaction of any high draft pick ever was a good idea.
I think it was a great idea.
Actually, you know what we could sum it up with is our friend Robert Zaglinski.
No,
and
dude,
his...
Rob's brain is broken. He's done. He's toast. He's a man lost.
I saw him all on like Friday trying to argue, oh, John Lynch isn't a genius. He took CJ Beathard. And I just wanted to pull him aside and be like, Rob, really, dude, you're doing this to yourself.
I told him immediately, like it immediately popped into my brain. I was like, you're going to bust the San Francisco 49ers balls for taking CJ Beathard, but you are not allowed to shame anybody else's quarterback decisions. Okay. Your team compounded a crucial error by signing Mike Glennon and saying, well, let's take, you know, Trubisky and he'll redshirt and
spend four draft picks on him.
That's the thing. Like, this is, and by the way, yeah, they were bidding against themselves because the 49ers were going to take Solomon Thomas anyway.
Well, they were going to take Reuben Foster if the Bears were going to take Solomon Thomas. So, like, either way, they were going to get one of the guys that they wanted. They ended up getting both the guys they wanted, though, because Reuben Foster fell so far. But, like, I don't have a problem with them signing Mike Glennon and then redshirting Mitchell Trubisky. I have a problem with them giving up the whole host of picks that they did to get him. And essentially shooting themselves in the foot. Yeah, no, it's awful. It's terrible. It's an awful trade. You can't shake it any other way.
This was the worst. This was the NFL at its worst, at its most backstabbing and petty and silly. You just read some of the exchanges, because John Fox was in the complete dark about this, too. Fox had no clue this was happening.
I mean, John Fox at this point is like, he's like a dead man walking, I think.
He is, but at the same time, Ryan Pace, this is the most cynical move Ryan Pace could have made, right? It's like, oh, I'm developing this quarterback. And it's like, yeah, you're developing him by trading away the entire goddamn future.
Maybe my favorite part, even though there's so many parts to love about this story, is if you read Monday Morning Quarterback, Peter King was in the San Francisco draft room, the war room there. He details, like, they have the Bears on the hook, line, and sinker. It's done. And John Lynch is like, let's call him back and see if we can get a little more. Let's see if we can get him to throw in another fourth round. And they absolutely do. They're like, oh, yeah, take another one. Who the hell cares? This is our guy. It's unbelievable. I love this story so, so much.
I just love that a team was so willing to, like, hitch their wagon to Mitchell Trubisky. Like, so willing. And it was the Chicago Bears.
I thought Pat Mahomes is a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky.
Me and you are on the Pat Mahomes bandwagon, man.
We are. We're going to talk about that, I think, next week. But I think, yeah, I said on Twitter, I think he's in a good position long term.
I'll steer that thing in the goddamn ground, though, because, like, yeah. Nothing about Pat Mahomes says that he's going to be successful. But when I watch him throw a football like 70 yards in the air, I'm like, yeah, I want that guy.
Dude, I don't even need to watch him. I just need to look at a Texas Tech box score where he throws for like 700 yards, 8 touchdowns. And because Texas Tech has no defense, they still lose the game.
Talk about pro style. Am I right?
Yeah, seriously. All right, let's get some more questions now that we've had our laughs at them. A lot of people asking us about the cheesesteaks. Let's see here. So, I mean, we didn't get to... I think the only thing I want to say about the cheesesteaks, TJW Go Blue asks where the best cheesesteak was, but I think the only things we can say is, like, we had a bunch of other places. We didn't have enough time to get to all of them. We'll stand by Woodrow's and Jimmy G's, but, like, we didn't get to Nick's, we didn't get to Jim's, we didn't get to Tony Luke's, Pat's, Gino's...
Yeah, we decided to go away from the Ginos and the Pats and the more commercial options and the more, like, tried and true. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, you got to pick between Ginos and Pats. It's kind of weird, though, in Michigan, because at the same time, like, if somebody were to say, hey, I want to get a Coney dog, like, I would tell them, well, like, go to Lafayette or you go to, like, Detroit, but, like, or American Coney. So it's like, I get, like, the sentiment, but at the same time, I think we made a really good decision by going to Woodrow's. That well, being
even
said,
the second tier, even the second tier, like I had a ton of people saying go to Nex, yeah, and we didn't get out there.
Those nachos I had at that pub were the bomb. They were good. We,
what was that? Con Murphy was the name of the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Con Murphy's Irish Pub.
Yeah, yeah. That was some of the best fish and chips I had too. Yeah, and you guys kept going back to that pizza place too.
Yeah, it was called Slice of Brooklyn. I don't know. It was whatever. Like, it was a slice of pizza.
You went to a place called Slice of Brooklyn in Philly?
It was by our hotel.
Okay,
come on.
Okay. We were trying to walk out to... That first night, we were like, let's go get a cheesesteak. Let's go to Jim's. It was like 2 miles away. We started walking, and Ryan and Alex see Slice of Brooklyn like...
I don't even love
three,
me into
four
this.
Blocks... on the route, and it's like, yeah, let's just get pizza here.
Hey, let's just get pizza because it's on the way back to our hotel, and we don't have to walk like 45 minutes to go get cheesesteak. And then
well, the big thing was,
and because team pizza over everything.
This was the very first night too, so if we would have walked to the cheesesteak place we were going to, it would have took like an hour.
We
might have missed
right.
the Detroit
you know
Lions.
But we're walking so far, we might have missed that first round. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, more questions. Joseph R. Sweeney 5. Summer movie season starts Friday with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. What movies are you folks looking forward to this summer?
Is Red Dead Redemption 2 a movie?
It's not, but I am really looking forward to that. Holy God.
Oh, okay.
What other movies are there?
That's a good question. I don't really know what's
I saw the new Fast and the Furious, and that was great.
You know what I'm most excited for? It looks insanely trashy, but that King Arthur movie with
there's another King Arthur movie?
Yeah, it's got Guy Ritchie, and Guy Ritchie is directing it. Charlie Hunnam is King Arthur. Like, I'm all in on this.
Not impressed.
Okay.
It's Guy Ritchie. I'm going to go for it. It's going to be like super actiony and trashy, and I'm going to love it.
Yeah, here's my quick look at the summer movies. I'm really excited for that. I don't know. I'm going to be kind of into that Alien Covenant movie. I'll go check that out.
I'm into that. I'm into
that's
that.
Ridley That's Scott, right? Like, he's coming back. He's doing the directing and everything. Okay, I'll get on board with that. The other thing that I'll get on board with, and I know this might be kind of controversial, but I can't wait to go see Spider-Man Homecoming.
I thought you were going to take the plunge again on DC and go see Wonder Woman.
No, I'm not going to go see that.
Yeah, you are. You're going to have to. Come on.
Definitely not. I will not go see that movie.
I'm going to see it anyway. I'm going to see Justice League and it's going to suck and I don't even care.
If I'm going to go see a superhero movie this summer, besides clearly like Spider-Man Homecoming, that's number one movie all time ever. But like Captain Underpants would be like my next choice.
Captain Underpants. I used to read those.
There is actually one movie I want to see, and it's not really, like, of the blockbuster ilk. It's Baby Driver, and I think that's Edgar Wright's new movie. I don't know anything about it, but Edgar Wright, you know, he's the guy who did Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. I'll pretty much watch anything that he makes, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, wait, Kevin Spacey's in it? Yeah, I'll go see it.
Yep.
Baby Driver? Okay, I'll go see it.
JWings40 asks us, over under the number of times we hear Bye Felicia during training camp in the preseason.
You won't hear it on Pride of Detroit.
I purposely did not write an article about that. I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, there's probably already like 100 articles about that before the dude got drafted.
Yeah, I can't set the total number. I can't set the total because it's rising astronomically by the day because of all these beat writers.
It's just going to be a shame when he gets cut and everyone is going to use that as a headline.
Oh, stop.
I think it would be used more on when he beats Jake Rudock out for the job, actually.
Go Blue Griff asks, who's the best character on Rick and Morty?
Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Ooh-wee!
I like Sleepy Gary as well. I mean, he was kind of short-lived.
Gary.
That whole episode has, like, all the best characters.
I would say the guy who owns Little Bits.
Can we do a list cast, please?
Of Rick and Morty characters?
Yes. Next week, top 10 Rick and Morty characters.
Maybe in the doldrums of the offseason, I'll be for a quick, like, 5-minute Rick and Morty list. How about when the new season comes out? As a
I'm
celebration.
Ants in My Eyes Johnson.
Ants in My Eyes Johnson would be in my top 10. Because he doesn't know if there's seals. Oh, he doesn't
baby
know.
Baby Legs Cop. Baby Legs Cop.
How could your top 10 list not have How could it not have Doofus Rick? But then, how could it also not have Krombopulous Michael?
Or like anything from the Cronenberg universe.
Oh boy, here I go killing again!
God.
Alright, let's...
Next question, yeah.
Tiny Rick is the answer, by the way.
Blake Berry asks us, how many cylinders would you give this draft class?
Oh, this is a very... This is an incredible question.
At least a dozen.
You would give it that many cylinders?
Oh, nine, maybe, on my low end, yeah. He needs extra cylinders.
This draft class gets 10.5 brapples.
How many cylinders do you think Mitchell Trubisky's beat-up car has?
4.
Out of 10 cylinders, I would probably give it an 8 because it kicked that.
Kicks ass.
That is a reference that absolutely not one listener will get.
Doesn't matter.
Jack H. asks us, who would win in a fight between Mighty Mouse and the Incredible Hulk?
Mighty Mouse, because he's mighty.
Mighty Mouse, because that's Demetrius Johnson, the MMA fighter's nickname, and he's actually a fighter.
The one that isn't in the Marvel or DC universe.
Next question. Let's see here. Maybe I can find a Lions question here that we have not covered already in the course of this this stuff. Ethan Leek asks, why didn't we draft a running back to strengthen that position? I think Bob Quinn spoke to this, and I kind of agree with him, even though I thought running back was kind of a bit of a need going into it. But if you believe in Amir Abdullah, your running back core is looking fine, I think. I don't know.
It is until anybody gets injured, right? Though,
like, right.
There's no depth at the position. A lot of people have been talking LeGarrette Blount over the last 2 or 3 days, and it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know if there's any mutual interest there. I haven't heard like one rumbling about it at all, so it makes me think that it's not going to happen.
Of course, it would make a lot of sense to the number one LeGarrette Blount fan.
But I mean. It's clear that the Lions just didn't like any of their guys, right? I mean, they had a shot. Did they have 2 shots at Delvin? They just had 1 shot, Delvin Cook. They obviously,
yeah.
Our favorite Kareem Hunt, they had a shot there in the third round, and they traded down. So clearly they just didn't like any of these guys. And it's a bit surprising considering, you know, Mike Mayock said there was 11 guys that could be starters in this year's draft. But yeah, I guess they just didn't like him. It's interesting, but it certainly remains a need, in my opinion.
Brandon at BFolk80. Anibal Sanchez, decent arm, hits opponents, bats with regularity, veteran with experience. Chance he can move from the bullpen to quarterback too.
He's definitely not going to usurp Brad Kaya. So, like, if he's cool with being QB3... or just kind of being like a veteran guy in the locker room, then I'm cool with that.
He can help coach up Brad Kaya once we cut Jake Rudock to make room for Sanchez.
Do you think that he could be a good placeholder? Because I think that we should give Sam Martin a little bit of a break.
I don't know. Like, that's
which cult classic was his mother in?
That's terrible.
That's my selling point.
All right, Trafalgar asks us, my wife and I have a sandwich controversy. I need expert opinions.
Ooh, I like this already.
The cheap chicken cordon bleu things that you bake, I make a bunch. I think it makes a good chicken sandwich as leftovers. That's it. I don't know where the question was there. I think we got cut off. Is he saying... Okay, there's two ways to read it. One, he's asking us, is a chicken cordon bleu, is a stuffed chicken a sandwich? Or, what do we feel about chicken cordon bleu as a sandwich, like putting that on a sandwich, and how do we feel about that as a sandwich?
Chicken cordon bleu is delicious, and I would argue if you think the double down is a sandwich, that the chicken cordon bleu is also a sandwich.
No, because it's two pieces of chicken. This is one piece of chicken that's been rolled in on itself.
Does not matter to me. So I think, yes, it's
like
a sandwich.
It's like saying a burrito. So is a burrito a sandwich?
Yes. We've discussed this. A Pop-Tart is
Jerry
a sandwich.
Jerry thinks a fucking candy cane is a sandwich.
A Pop-Tart is a sandwich. Ravioli is a sandwich. Ryan's nodding.
I'm putting down my foot. Ryan, are you all right?
I'm squanching in here.
Squanch is pretty high up there too, man.
Oh, God. Can we just end it there? Do we need to keep reading these questions?
I mean, go get your goddamn Zyrtec and call it a night.
iLion asks us, did anyone else notice all the talk during the draft about players with lingering shoulder issues hurting their draft stock?
I hadn't heard that at all.
I hadn't heard about this, but I do want to pass you guys on this. I saw that like a bunch of, I saw a stat, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like over 100 players left college early to enter the draft, and 25% of them went undrafted.
Players getting dumber and dumber by the year. I don't know why it keeps happening. Like, they'll probably hear they get like a sixth round grade from the whatever.
Is it the agents and the scouts? Is it the scouts doing it too?
Oh, their agents too, probably telling them that they're better off, or I don't know. Like, it's just stay in school, kids.
Yeah, so 27 players. So 27 players left college early and were not drafted at all. Like, I can kind of get it. Like, I think Kizer is absolutely better in the NFL than another year at Notre Dame with Brian Kelly. But, like, yeah, I... This is a tough one because it is hard because on the flip side, you have a guy like a Nick Saban or a Will Muschamp or someone who is... Or, like, what was the famous one? Lane Kiffin a few years ago was berating some guy... What was it, like 5 years ago or so? He said like you weren't going to be picked in the first round. He ended up getting picked in like, I mean, you're not going to be picked in the first three rounds. He ends up being like a first round pick or something.
What would have happened if Brad Kyo left a year early?
Stop.
No, honestly, I think that's a legit question. When you think your draft stock is the highest, you need to get out as a player. You need to get paid.
Brad Kyo's draft stock was not high right after.
It was. That's when he got picked. After last year's draft, that guy, Chris Burke of SI, had him as the number one pick overall.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with, like, projection. Like, he had, like, a good year. I think he only threw, like, four picks that year. So, like, it was like, oh, now we're going to, like, see, like, another one more big step or big leap. But, like, yeah, I totally agree with, like, your sentiment, though. I mean, when your perceived value is at its highest, you make a run for the money, no doubt.
And just
you squanch for that money.
You squanch that squanch.
Some people like they're being oversold in their value right now, though. Do you think like I'm just trying to figure out, because if you're leaving early, you got to be pretty confident about your skill. And 27 guys all left early and were left holding the bag.
I mean,
and there's some big names out there, too.
It's hard. It's hard to know. And when you have agents talking your ear off and probably telling you to go, it's hard to turn down that offer, and it's hard to really know where you stand.
Do you think that if underclassmen who are unpicked in the NFL draft, do you think they should be allowed to have the option to go back to school?
I mean, that kind of happens in basketball, doesn't it, Ryan?
Where, yeah, you can get an idea of what your draft stock is, and then you can choose to go back to school. You have to like undeclare by a certain date.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can declare, but then you can like undeclare and... It's a little bit more clear, but then again, like, basketball's made huge strides because you no longer have 17-year-old kids making decisions that'll affect the rest of their lives.
I mean, there's also only two rounds to the NBA draft, too. Like, there's not that many players who end up going compared to, you know, how many schools out there play basketball. Like, it's a pretty disparate number.
There's an awful lot of kids who don't get drafted, though, and they end up having to go play overseas to try to keep their dream alive.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of kids who end up going to like Europe or Israel or China. Yeah.
They have to squanch their way overseas.
Okay, you've done one too many squanches. I'm playing the outro music right now.
Hey, I'm squanching it.
And the music, Journey, Hall of Oates.